Welcome to Whistleblowers, episode 19. My name is Greg Kerr. Today we're going to have a look at the tentacles that stretch across Australia. Crime tentacles. And most importantly, missing children.
Decades ago has become one of Australia's most enduring mysteries. The question of what happened to the three siblings after they disappeared from an Adelaide beach has never been answered. But now, a year-long investigation by Seven News and the South Australian Police has revealed a possible burial ground. Seven News presenter Michael Usher has steered the investigation from our side and...
Poor old Koshy and poor old Michael Usher. They did that investigative piece a few years ago. And we've got some breaking news here this morning on the Beaumont children disappearance. Good morning, Jennifer Stone. You've come in this morning. I'm not giving you a chance to even sip your coffee. You've got your book out. You've got lots of information. What's going on down in Glenelg Beach and what's happening in this ever-changing story of the missing Beaumont kids?
Well, the three children just disappeared. This is a time in Australian history where it changed the face of how parents allowed their children just to roam free. It was like, grab your children and make sure you looked after them, because if you didn't, they'd just vanish. And you start to think, well, what was about Glenelg? That, you know, was the attraction. And then when I've been doing the investigations, looking at the links, the coincidences, the patterns that are formed. So we've got Grant that went missing. He was 4 at the time. And William Terrell was 3. Madeleine McCain was 3. You know, though that's around the world. As Donald Trump has said in the last couple of months, he's bringing down an ancient sex trafficking gang. And I do believe it. I do believe that they'll interlink, because where the bones remain will expose the evidence. And that's how the police cannot solve a crime, when the bones go missing. And it's quite a pattern that you start to think, well, what are the other ways that you could solve it? You know, you could follow up. And the police had leads, you know, and I linked to astrology within the crimes that they've used. So Australia Day 1966, we had the planet alignment of Saturn, and Quindelsi Saturn indicates an obsession with the Grim Reaper. Like, what was happening in the sky was coming alive on Earth. And that's what happens when we have the meteor showers and the gunfire on Earth. It's all one gang, one drug network around Australia. And that's the part where, if you start to think about it as one, you start to realise these patterns are more than just a coincidence. They're real leads.
All right, well, there we go. I mean, even my brain's being a little bit stretched by some of that astrology information, but nevertheless, many people have come in like Jen and mentioned things that possibly aren't in the rational minds of the police investigators, and the bodies have never been found. So for those that are listening from elsewhere, Adelaide is a capital city of the state of South Australia. And this is a very widespread and open area of land. And back in the era that we're talking about, 1956, the parents of these children were quite religious, Presbyterian, and they lived in that Adelaide city area with their family. There are some interesting pieces of information to come out of this, and if you go onto the internet, you can see all the information there that's in the realm of public investigation. And, you know, there's numerous people like Jennifer that are providing information from the sides. So there was a prime suspect. There was also other sightings of the children. There are many names of people that have been investigated. And there's Channel 7 today with Koshy and Michael Usher. Breaking, new digs into land down there, and nothing has ever been found. Jennifer, you mentioned that Koshy is again in Channel 7, just trying to get their advertising revenue up, of course. They're just throwing out red herrings.
Yes, well, an unsolved crime is not a case closed, so they can keep opening it. They could say anything, and people will watch it because people are obsessed with unsolved crime, why the police can't figure it out. It's a very much key importance. Because within this vanishing of the Beaumont children, we had suspects back then. Allegedly Arthur Stanley Brown was one of them, and Derek Ernest Percy. Now, Arthur Brown is gone. He's brown bred. Derek Percy, I believe, is still alive. Now, he was not 18 years of age at the time the Beaumont children went missing. And that's interesting because a lot of the gang-related bikies and that, they use under 15 years to do the crime because they can't get caught. They don't spend time in prison. They use it like an initiation of moving up within the gang. But one of the persons that I link into to the Beaumont children is not widely known about, not even discussed, not even links into their Channel 7 report. And I started to wonder why not. And I've tried to send it to the Dr. Mallett, the professor, Newcastle University, on her crime-fighting ability to solve a crime that I don't believe she solved any, actually, nor has reopened any cases. But it's interesting that you hear nothing back, but are they telling a story, their version, to keep steering the police away from the real evidence? And the public will draw their own conclusions, like you be the judge, but is there enough for a dig, or are we digging in something like a heaven that's been man-made?
Wow, there we go. Well, have a listen to this.
Now to a baffling disappearance that's become one of our nation's most enduring mysteries. Tomorrow marks 50 years since the three Beaumont children went missing.
It's Australia Day, 1966, and the Beaumont children, 9-year-old Jane, 7-year-old Anna, and 4-year-old Grant, head off alone to Adelaide's popular Glenelg Beach. They were last seen on the beach with a tall man, and that's the best description police have ever had of him. Their local postman later reported seeing the children heading for home, but they never arrived. Extensive searches failed to turn up any trace of the three children. And 50 years on, police are still receiving calls from people who say they want to help solve one of Australia's most disturbing cold cases.
Now, Jennifer, you've got the run sheet there, the police run sheet from the day of the disappearance. Okay, so you've kept that. People can find that on the internet as well. What can you tell us about the police run sheet on Australia Day, the day the Beaumont children went missing?
Well, I started to think that within the investigations I have followed, normally within the evidence that goes to the police, it gets changed. And when I went back through the run sheet when I found it on the Beaumont children, I realised it was changed, but always by the father. The mother was silent in it. But then back in 1966, the man, he would have gone to the police. The mother probably would have stayed at home waiting for her children to come home. You know, and also the police would have been able to drive their car there and interview her. But it's interesting about the run sheet on the Beaumont children. So it was reported by the father at 1920, which is 7:20 p.m. Now, these were children that had gone to the beach, so they had waited. The father reported it to Glenelg Police. The father then stated the children left home at 1300 hours, which is 1 p.m., and they were due to return at 1700, which is 5 p.m. This information was later amended by father. Children left home 10 o'clock in the morning and were due to return at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, as you go through, the father was supposed to come home late and then he came home earlier that day. So it was, I knew he wasn't there. I had known he'd gone out of town. So the mother was there. Why would she allow the kids just to catch the bus down to the beach by herself? Why not go with them?
Well, just on that, looking at the background information here that we've got from an unknown source, Jane, Anna and Grant Beaumont lived with mum and dad. Jim Beaumont, his real name, his birth name, was Grantham or Grant. So his name is Grant, but he became known as Jim Beaumont. And one piece of information Jennifer will reveal to you in a minute was that Jim was a taxi driver. It says it here. He was a former serviceman and he was a driver for Suburban Taxis. He was also...
Oh, allegedly an SP bookie.
He was an SP bookie, taking illegal wages in sometimes big sums of money on the local and Australian racing industry. Okay, he was presenting as a good Presbyterian man. And so they lived in this area known as Somerton Park, a suburb of the city of Adelaide, not far from the beach that Jen's mentioned, which is Glenelg Beach, a very popular beachside summer holiday sort of place where children and families flocked. And children were allowed to go out unsupervised. In those days, Australia was a very innocent place. It was a popular spot that children can come and meet from many parts of Adelaide, and there was a lot of surf music. In the midst of this heat wave on Australia Day, January 25, what I find interesting is Jim Beaumont is allegedly said to have dropped the children off at Glenelg Beach before he heads off. Jim drops the kids off at the beach, and where does he head off to? On a three-day sales trip to a town known as Snowtown. Snowtown. That name should vibrate through people from overseas as well. If you Google Snowtown murders, hold on to your seat, folks. There's a story. So, Jim's gone off. SP Jim has gone off for a three-day sales trip to Snowtown. Jane, the eldest child, was considered responsible enough to care for the two younger ones, and we can see that in the photographs of the kids. And she was probably very responsible, okay? Responsible enough to say no to a stranger, but also responsible enough to say yes to a familiar face. And this is where the hoaxes and the different theories come in around the missing kids. Given the social conditions of the time, their parents were not concerned about the trip to the beach.
That's right. But they were seen at the beach. There are confirmed reportings. And the police actually did a lot of searches that night. 2018, Sergeant Copland dispatched to Glenelg to assist. So they walked the beach. They went to where the kids would normally walk. The father was there in some of the photos that I've studied, but the mother was never. I didn't see her in the... Now, if I was the mother, I probably would have been there searching too. But we're talking about a different era, and I can understand that. So Brighton Police dispatched to search the foreshore, 8:40 p.m. And then they searched the West Beach, Henley. Courtesy car was dispatched to confer. You know, they searched things like the movie theatres, but no sightings. They talked to the bus drivers, no sightings. So who did the children go back with? Did they go back with a kid that knew them? That's a possibility. But it's interesting that the times were all wrong. What time did he get? Did they? He drop them off? Now, if the father dropped them off at 10 o'clock, why would he first say to the police, 1 o'clock? And actually, when you go through the things, that they had been there buying a pie, meat pie, with a pound note, which they didn't have when they left home at the pie shop. So that was lunchtime. They were definitely buying pies for lunch.
Well, there we go. So Jim was well known in the area, okay? And we're figuring here that, you know, any SP bookie that I've spoken to from that era, I actually know one myself. He's no longer with us. But the stories he told of the, you know, innocent working class men that would put their bets on, and women, but there were some dark and shady figures. And often big sums of money would change hands. So Jim was a nice Presbyterian man, presenting well on Sunday mornings, no doubt, with a loving wife and kids. But there was another side to Jim, or Grant, is his real name. We keep calling him Jim, but don't forget his real name was Grant. And one possible explanation is that in that era, and even today, possibly men, my own father used a different name when he was talking about his lawn mowing business. So we don't know, but I think Jim may have been his business name, or his SP bookie name, or the name that the people round town knew him by. But this story gets more interesting. We have information here via the Sun Herald that Abe Saffron, a name that's been mentioned to many people across Australia and the world, and Jennifer writes about him prolifically in her King's Cross Sting books. Abe Saffron goes right to the heart of organised crime in Australia. Why would the name Abe Saffron come up in the story to do with Grant Beaumont and the missing Beaumont kids?
Well, Abe Saffron links into King's Cross. But also, I was doing some research back in 2011 and 12 and noticed that some of the drug runners from King's Cross would drive to South Australia to pick up drugs. And Glenelg was a place where they went, or near there, the ports. So then you started to think, well, what sort of drugs were they? And you start to go back in the history and the Fords, and how the car parts could have come in with drugs and then shuffled out. But the steroids were going that way too. So I know I linked into the steroids in 2011 and the cocaine coming from South Australia up to King's Cross.
Excellent link, Jennifer. And, you know, I'm sure the police have investigated this, but some things that the person in the pub or the man on the street will look at information sometimes and go, that's glaringly obvious. Have they looked at that? But this man, Abraham Gilbert Saffron, Abe Saffron as he's become known, is a Jewish boy. He went to a school in Sydney named Fort Street High. Now, at Fort Street High, you either become a politician or a criminal, or a businessman, I should say. Our own John Howard, the ex-Prime Minister of Australia, was a student of Fort Street High, probably at a similar time to Abraham Saffron. So, John, if you can just send a message in to Whistleblowers, we would love to hear if you knew Abe Saffron while you're at school or after school, John. Another innocent little Presbyterian boy, Johnny Howard. So the tentacles start to run thick. A slightly built, dapper man, as he was described, Saffron had enormous influence, and his business tentacles reached across Australia. If you went to school with a serving prime minister and you were a crime boss, you could let those tentacles filter out across the land, no doubt. But his reputation was dreadful. He was constantly attacked. In the South, and this is where the Beaumont kids come in the South Australian Parliament, the then Premier Don Dunstan described Abe Saffron as being one of the principal characters in organised crime in Australia. In federal parliament by the then Senator Don Chipp, described him as one of the most notorious, despicable human beings. If one can use the term loosely, living in this country. The Victorian Parliament, he was also called Gomorrah himself, a reference to a person linked with drug activities who went by the name in evidence to the Costigan Royal Commission into the Painters and Dockers Union. So Saffron was always reacted badly to these sorts of inferences that he was involved in drugs. I wonder if Abe, well, he would have been a little Jewish boy, okay? I wonder if he was very religious as well, like little Johnny Howard. But these men with religious backgrounds can provide a front for often very dark and sinister behaviours behind the scenes. And this is where it comes back to little Jimmy Beaumont. Go on, Jennifer.
Well, I found this clipping and it came up about a Hobart link in the Beaumont children. So the Hobart police began a full-scale search for a stranger who may be linked with the missing Beaumont children. So the fly-in, fly-out scenario of someone that just turns up, or someone that knows the Beaumont children that allowed them to get taken to somebody else. So this was on a plane, a 6-foot slim guy in his late 30s with long, unkept, sun-bleached hair. So a bit like a beachy guy, a surfer. He had been heard talking to a small boy about Adelaide. So this was a link in Hobart that was referred in. So it showed you that the kids were alive by some reports.
Okay, let's have a listen to the Channel 10.
Author Michael Madigan has looked at the evidence available on the Beaumont children's disappearance and he joins us now from Adelaide. Michael, thanks so much for joining us. This is such a baffling case. Now, recent reports say police are investigating new leads. What do you think about this so-called new evidence or new leads?
Look, the South Australian Police has had a remarkable chance to investigate this. They've put a lot of resources into this case. And just recently, police were contacted by an informer. And this piece of information, police are taking very seriously, but it's only one of thousands of pieces of information that police have been reported to.
It was 50 years ago.
Well, 50 years ago, it's so much different to today. There was no security cameras. There was very little resources at the Glenelg police station. In fact, there was dozens and dozens of people lined up outside the Glenelg police station waiting to give statements, and all the police had was one typewriter and very little resources until a little bit later in the investigation. But police were very thorough in the investigations, but the only problem I have with the investigation was a day after the children went missing, a cake shop worker reported that the children came into the shop and purchased pies and pasties with a £1 note. And this was never given to the media until 1 year later, which I think probably was the only mistake the police made in this case.
Very interesting. It sort of turns my stomach to even read about this case 50 years later, Michael.
Now I'll go on to this. So it was in 1966, a ransom demand was made after the children went missing. So this was about the 9th of February 1966. So they had been gone for 2 weeks. And some say it was a hoaxer, began playing these games. There was a call to the news, Adelaide, by someone with a foreign accent, included a reassurance that the children were safe, the demand for a ransom to be paid in return for the children. But there was already a reward at the time for £1,050. But that wasn't enough for them. So they never actually said what the reward was, but they made out the children were alive 2 weeks after. But really, that was probably a red herring. So I was working on the theory that they came to Sydney. And there was a report. Sydney police check a lead on children. So this was the 31st of January 1966. It was reported that the Beaumont children flew to Sydney. In spite of the police investigations, there were no signs of the children. And that was interesting. Why would they get a lead about the children going there? But what if the children were already dead and just packed in a suitcase? It was very easy to be moved on a plane.
Well, there we go. Interesting, never before heard of information there. And why would we make the link between South Australian Parliament, Abe Saffron, and the missing Beaumont children? Well, have a look, listen to this. This is the sound of allegedly Don Dunstan walking into King's Cross, the Piccolo Bar. And for those that don't know what the Piccolo Bar was, it's a cafe in the middle of King's Cross, still there today under new ownership, where people used to meet. The tentacles run deep.
Coffee Bar, Sydney's King's Cross. You can still find jazz records on the jukebox and see faces of the 1950s bohemia. Jazz musos hung out here after a job, along with black dancers from the strip clubs, intellectual refugees from Europe, crims, despots. Sometimes Bumper Farrell's vice squad would rush in here, smell your coffee, see if you got whiskey in it. If you didn't, they'd help you out and bust you. Nice guys.
So Jennifer Stone, you mentioned, you know, Don Dunstan spoke about Abe Saffron in South Australian Parliament. He was allegedly a regular customer at the Piccolo Bar in Sydney. Was he going there to gain information, or was he part of the system?
Oh, well, that'd be hard to prove and possibly impossible. But people used to go to King's Cross to pick up their bags of cash. For turning the blind eye, keeping Abe safe, was it? I don't know. And I don't really link the Piccolo Bar to where they picked up the money. But remember, where I want search is within a block of this. So it's an interesting place to go to and for someone to meet up and then walk up there. So it was a position in King's Cross that dates back in 1860 to being involved in the underworld.
Definitely, and you would have listened to our previous episodes on Frank Sinatra, Abe Saffron, and the building up on the corner of Roslyn Street and Darlinghurst Road. That was where the banking facilities were originated there in Sydney, and allegedly the crime gangs came in through that, and Abe Saffron had an office in that building. The Piccolo Bar was a matter of doors down the street, and it was a great place just to go in and have a coffee, have the chat, and do business elsewhere.
Yeah, but you used to sell pot, a pound of hash or whatever it is you're needing. Heroin, it was good for that too.
Wow.
Yes. So it was quite a supply force that's off the main drag. But people used to wait in the park for their turn for going in to buy.
So there we go, the Piccolo Bar. This is going off the track a little bit, but we just heard in that clip about the Bumper Farrell alcohol. They were serving caffeine at the time. So you're saying other substances, and even the proprietor got himself into a bit of trouble at one point. What was that story?
Well, Vito, he was actually a shoe man during the day selling shoes, and it wasn't paying that well, but he would do the pot, measure it out, pound a pot and whatever. And these guys came into the shop and he asked them how much they wanted, and they were actually undercover cops, and he got arrested for selling his pot. But the people waiting were queues. They were everywhere. So what happened was he got marched up to King's Cross Police Station. By the time he got there, there were two well-known barristers, by what I was told, waiting to get him out. Nothing happened about it.
Well, there we go. So we're painting the picture there of this little cafe called the Piccolo Bar, and It links back to Don Dunstan and the Beaumont children disappearance.
I was actually at the beach as a seven-year-old, the same age as Anna that day. Our parents, we used to holiday in Glenelg in January, and I was one of the six children. And we would often go to the corner deli in Glenelg and get the milk and bread for the day. It was more like had more freedom in those days, but it was a measured form of freedom. But of course, this case made people think. It was a huge wake-up call for Australia and parents.
And Jennifer, we're coming to the end of the episode, but you might like to just make some comments about how it changed Australia and your work over the years with missing children.
Well, I'll just do the last little bit. So in 2014 to 15, I linked into a guy called Max McIntyre as I was going through my research into the Beaumont children. 2017, I found a bit out about his son, Andrew McIntyre, claimed his father's friend, Anthony Munro, also knew something about the crimes of the Beaumont children. So Max McIntyre's son believes he had the Beaumont children. And it's interesting, the children he brought home, and within the year, December, his wife was found dead, brown bread. So if you're wanting to hide something, normally a silent witness is a dead witness. So the Beaumont children and the links to the McIntyres is something that I sent into the police. And I stopped doing my book because I started to think, oh, this was really real. I thought I had a link. Max McIntyre, at the time I sent it in, was actually alive. So he lived at the home that's alleged he brought back the children dead. Now, it's interesting, if he put them into a suitcase and someone picked them up and flew them to Sydney, and they give you out. That's what I found. The gang gives the leads. So were they in a suitcase on their way to Sydney on the 31st of January 1966? So then all these other leads of asking for ransom but never an amount of money were maybe one dealer after another getting their, you know, drug users to ring up and play a game. All for the red herrings that are to confuse, to create the chaos. And then the police have got no leads without a body. So you started to think, you know, some say that there was a house that the children went into that had a tunnel to allegedly the Adelaide Parliament. Now, if that was possible, that would mean that they were sold. Who was around at that time, 1966. And remember, it was this time when Robert Menzies retired. He stood down. And the same day, Prime Minister Harold Holt, the Treasurer, became the Prime Minister of Australia.
That's a coincidence. So on that same day the Beaumont children went missing, you can Google this story. It's about the Prime Minister who went missing.
Yes, Prime Minister Harold Holt.
He was sworn into power on the same day the Beaumont children went missing.
And he was also the instigator of changing the money from pounds to dollars to stop the black market. Because what happened was, it was only a short period of time, all the pound notes had to be banked, and then it got converted to Australian money as we know today. But back then, the black money couldn't get transferred.
And the SP money?
Yes, they got caught with a lot.
So the SP bookies, the black money, if you had a lot of these funds sitting in your possession, and suddenly this guy's been elected, and they knew they only had a short amount of time to wash this money, what do we understand may have happened?
Oh, well, for Prime Minister Harold Holt, some say he swam out to a submarine. I used to think that was like a bit of a joke. It was not possible. But and the submarine they linked to Abe Saffron. So of course I would have written about it, of course I would have read about it. But then you start to think what we're finding out now with Griswold Maxwell and the Jeff Epstein links, that her father, Robert Maxwell, had links to submarines.
So we'll put that out because a lot of illegal activity around the coast of Australia happens by boat.
Yes.
And we can see boats and they come up on radars. But there's another episode in itself. What about underwater? I mean, we can pick up things above the water. Harold Holt, Prime Minister, allegedly drowned.
Oh, no, but there's been no bones.
So nobody ever found. Yeah. Beaumont children, nobody ever
found. Well, William Terrell, nobody. Juanita Nelson, nobody. Donald McKay, nobody. And there are many others. Christopher Flannery that we've gone through, nobody.
So there is a pattern, and we are led to believe what we hear in the media. That's why in Australia now it's very one-sided, with Murdoch media protecting the interests of the wealthy, the politically powerful, and many of the politicians, Fort Street politicians, become puppets to this. And that's why whistleblowers is just attempting to throw in some information that you won't hear about if you... take the nightly news cycle from Channel 9 or Channel 7 and you swallow it hook, line and sinker. So back to the Beaumonts, we're going to finish here shortly. What do you think may happen in this case, Jen? Where do you see this going? Is it just going to be more red herrings, or do you think we'll see something develop as some of these people pass on? I mean, we do note that the Beaumont parents separated. Okay, Nancy Beaumont died last year in 2019. So leaving all feelings and emotions aside, you know, our sympathy towards the family, you know, all of this, we can't help but say there's some secrets going on in that marriage. There's some secrets going on for Grant Beaumont. He was an SP bookie at the time that pounds changed to dollars. There is some unsavoury comments being made in South Australian Parliament. There's Don Dunstan visiting King's Cross regularly, Abe Saffron's territory. Will we ever find the bodies?
Well, that's the key. Where the bones remain will unravel the crime a little bit more, so we can see it. But what I got told, there is like, they say when you walk into heaven, there's a book of names. Well, in the underworld, they also have the book of names to make sure when the big bosses go down, all the others will go down with them when the evidence is raised. You know, for these murders of missing persons, I link into that they've kept a trophy from the crime. All we can hope is that trophy is hidden in the old offices of Abe Saffron.
Well, there we go. Thank you for listening to Whistleblowers today, folks. Before you go, I will direct you towards Jennifer's website, www.jenniferstone-author.org. Or you might like to put in chandelier.
Sparkling chandeliers.
Sparklingchandeliers.com. And you'll be directed towards some of Jennifer's prolific writing and her books that are available on Amazon for you to learn more about missing persons in Australia, organised crime, and today's episode, The Tentacles That Stretch Across Australia. My name's Greg Kerr, and we'll see you next time again for Whistleblowers.